Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, have you ever had a goal that you've worked really hard towards and then for some reason you get stuck right before the finish line? You might need to take one more class to get your degree. You might need to lose just 5 pounds to make your weight goal. It might be you need to get licensed to get to the next career and big pay grade jump, but you just don't do it for some reason. So I have the perfect guest to talk to us about that. She's an author and therapist, Bridget Dengel Gaspard, and she coined the term the final eighth to describe this phenomenon. So let me tell you a little bit about Bridget. She is the author of The Final Eighth, Enlist Your Inner Selves to Accomplish Your Goals. She's the founder of the New York Voice Dialogue Institute. She's a former performer who earned a master's degree from Columbia University and teaches at numerous professional settings, including Omega Institute. She lives in New York City, where she has a private practice. And you can find out more about her at finaleighth.com, finaleighth.com. And again, the book is called The Final Eighth, Enlist Your Inner Selves to Accomplish Your Goals. And here's my guest, Bridget Dengel Gaspard. Bridget Dengel Gaspard, welcome to the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, I always like to share a little background with our listeners when I talk to somebody for the first time. So I read that you were born in Stratford, Ontario, and you were known originally as Puck's child. So tell us about that, Bridget.
Well, my father was an actor, and my mother happened to be pregnant as they went to the Shakespeare Festival. And he was playing Puck when I arrived, July 22nd. And so that's what I was held up by the cast and as Puck's child. This is Puck's child. And I know, and I feel I do have some of that Puck trickster energy for sure.
Yeah. I used to live in Stratford in England, by the way. So when we'd go to pubs at night, we'd see people like Dame Judi Dench, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, John Gielgud, depending who was playing in Stratford. At the Shakespeare Theatre there. And so you followed in your dad's footsteps, as I understand. You went into acting, improv, comedy.
Yes, and I spent a lot of time in New York City and had a lot of fun. And how I got into comedy was, in a way, because I got more respect than just acting at the time, because you had to write your own material. You still do. So it was through performing and wanting some more control over my career, not just waiting for an audition and then for being able to get the audition, I started doing comedy and just really enjoyed that, as well as the literal writing, like what to bring up and how to present it and playing with the energy of the audience. It was just so enlivening.
Yeah, I can imagine. I always have thought that comedy must be one of the hardest gigs to do, though, because your feedback is instantaneous, for one thing.
Yes.
And if it's not good, it's not a good place to be, because there you are up on stage. Did you find that challenging? Or
yes, absolutely. I mean, that's both the thrill and the horror. And after that, actually, everything has been easier, and I'm not kidding, because to die, it is humiliating, because they call it that when your joke just falls flat and the audience either does nothing, because that's as awful as if they were to say, you know, booing or something. At least booing, they respond, but the true death of a joke is when you hear the echoes of the vacuum of the universe, because no one is saying anything, and it's all public. It's public humiliation. Now, some people, and I learned this a little bit, you actually use that to get a punchline afterwards. Like, you can kind of incorporate that, because it's everyone's worst nightmare to be a comic whose joke dies. And you can kind of, that is a shared experience, that it's a nightmare. But it really, once you get over that a few times, you just have stronger muscles to try new things.
Yes, yeah, I think it's very good grounding. And somewhere along the way, that kind of led into the book that you've written, The Final Eighth, because you were a student at some point of Dr. Hal and Sidra Stone, who you describe as mentors, and they introduced you to voice dialogue, which you talk about in The Final Eighth. So what was that experience like working with them as a student?
It was amazing, and it happened inversely. So I was pursuing my acting and all of that, and I was looking for creativity tools and also going on my own self-healing journey through reading important books like creative visualization by Shakti Gawain, that kind of thing. And I literally read about voice dialogue in one of those books, and I was electrified. I'm like, this voice dialogue sounds amazing. And I actually hunted them down. And in those days, it was like, what's their 800 number is how you hunted them down. And it was so powerful. And they developed the work. And they, unfortunately, Hal has recently passed. But at the ripe old age of 93, he died in his sleep in his bed at home. But they were both so generous as mentors, and this work really is empowering because you understand that every single part of you, also called alter egos, inner selves, subpersonalities, personas, but they each have wisdom, and they also have the noble purpose of protecting your vulnerability, regardless of how dysfunctional they may behave currently or kind of how out of date they are, like the way they look at the world is the way you looked at the world at age 4. But working with them and just getting an apprenticeship in energy and physiology as well, because how we hold our different parts is all physical. And we use it in our everyday speech. Oh, I can see he's angry, or his shy self just came up. We kind of use this language, but it's because we spot it physiologically. We see when someone's shy or angry. And so working with them, you really got to get this whole universe of how these cells live.
Right, right. It's fascinating stuff. So how did you then get into like psychotherapy and the work that you do now, helping people overcome creative blocks?
So I really entered the voice dialogue world as a way to access different parts of myself so I could use them as a character in a play or if I was exploring something in comedy. And so that's how I started getting trained in it. But as I worked with the voice dialogue community and Hal and Sidra, the healing that happened and such rapid shifts blew me away, and that got much more interesting than pursuing acting per se. And so that's when I went and got my master's from Columbia, because in New York City, that's the quickest way you can become a psychotherapist. And then I thought, well, let me bring my clinical knowledge, which I got through the degree, with all of this creative work that I have, and also how to use voice dialogue in all of these worlds and be part of bringing it. And because I'm a performer and a former performer, a lot of my clients were actors, so I understood that world so well and which parts you needed to use, say, to go through the audition system, like
yes,
the part of you that is like a hostess, hello, but then you have to let all of that go, play Ophelia the moment before she contemplates suicide, and then come back and be sane again and say thanks for a nice meeting. Right?
Right. I mean, talk about playing roles. You're constantly there. And so let's talk about what The Final Eighth means. So the full title of the book, as I gave in the beginning in the intro, was The Final Eighth: Enlist Your Inner Selves to Accomplish Your Goals. And you describe The Final Eighth as the demoralizing quandary of failing within sight of victory. So we do all this great work, we get successful, and we stop before we hit the finish line. So why The Final Eighth? Talk to us about that.
So I was working with clients one-on-one mostly, and it came up, like it came to me from the bottom of my belly, this is a final eighth issue, because it happened across the board. And since we were working together, I knew that they had worked hard, that they were talented, and they would stop right in front of the finish line. Like editor was waiting for their finished scripts to publish them, but they didn't ever get it to that editor, that kind of thing. And it didn't just happen with those of my clients that are in the creative fields. It also happened with a lawyer and a banker. And I realized that something is happening here because these people have a goal, they're really pursuing it, and it was a mystery to me at first. Like, what is going on? And it felt terrible. And examples abound, right, of that last 5 pounds you don't lose, or, you know, the ABD, all but dissertation. You do everything except you don't finish the writing to then literally get your PhD so you can be Dr. so-and-so. And that's how it came out fully formed, like the final eighth. People have done so much work. And that's when I realized, oh, you think you want your goal with every fiber of your being, but it's not true. There are parts of you who are against your goal, and for excellent reason. And that's the great thing about voice dialogue, which I guide readers step by step so that they can do this themselves. You want to find out the wisdom, you know, your resistant self, your lazy self, or these selves that we give kind of mean labels, and you're like, I don't know what came over me. I just got spacey and I forgot to do the thing. We would say that spacey self is a self, so let's go visit it. And what does that self care about? And they are fearful about something. And then once you deal with those concerns directly, then you're able to usually cross the finish line. And it's extraordinary, but usually it's because you have to access different parts of yourself for that final eighth. You have to go from being a contender to being a victor, which means you have to have access to your confidence, to your competitiveness, to your visionary. And a lot of people don't have access to these golden parts of themselves. So I like to say the final eighth process is often quite fun and liberating. You know, how do you embody your diva that just says, this is what the choreography is going to be?
Right.
That's confidence, you know?
Right. So would you give us an example of two of your inner selves? Obviously, we're not talking about, you know, multiple personalities here. We're all made up of so many different parts. And don't you agree that it depends sometimes on the situation and who we are with as to what comes forward?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up. I really want to support you. You know, this is not about Sybil or that kind of thing. Now it's called dissociative identity disorder. Those are trauma-based, very sad disorders, and there are treatments for those. But this is, your healthy personality consists of many selves. And that's what we're talking about. And so depending on who you're with, we do access different selves. That's why, like our best friend, it's usually we hook up with that person because our energy connects with them. And, you know, even if we're like bookworms that love to travel to different libraries, those selves would be different than two best friends who love to play tennis competitively. And so in terms of what selves are stopping you at the final eighth, it would be different for different people depending on their relationship. Some selves, it's like you need to access more tender parts of yourself. You need to gain some interpersonal selves because you need to be better at diplomacy in order to follow through your goal. And for other people, they need to hook into more fierce selves that are able to be assertive. And that depends on the personal history of the person, which selves are the ones that really lock in at the final eight.
Yeah. So what are a couple of yours? Maybe one that helps you move forward and then one that you maybe have to contend with sometimes.
Got you. So I would say that I have an adventurer, and that helps me move forward. Like, I like new things and meeting new people, and it's like, okay, well, how does this work? Like, pursuing voice dialogue or even pursuing writing a book. This is my first book. So that's one that helps me. And one that one of many that stops me, and I talk about some of this in the book, would be I have a shy self. So one that can be the opposite, sort of afraid to meet new people. And I also have a kind of, I'm trying to think, like what we would call her, like a cynic, which can be like, you know, don't bother, things don't work out, you know, that kind of echoes some early stuff I learned from some of my early caregivers. Like, so the cynic makes it seem like nothing's worth it. and it's protecting me so I don't get my feelings hurt.
Yes.
But in fact, it pulls me back, and then it's like, well, nothing's worth it. If that's true, then nothing is worth anything. Like, the cynic's point of view of the world isn't true, but what is true is it's trying to protect your feelings so that you don't get hurt when you overdo it or you say a joke that falls flat.
Right, right. So what I'm hearing right now from a lot of people, and I suspect you're hearing the same thing, is because of the pandemic and it's been going on so long, and, you know, many people have lost their jobs, or many people have kind of got stuck, which is what this is all about, really. When we get in that place of stuckness, how do we get out of it? One thing I'm hearing a lot from people is that they do have this time, but they're still procrastinating. They're still resisting doing what they, you know, is on their back burner. And it might be a book, it might be to get their artwork out again. But how do you deal with that procrastinator character there? Because I've certainly, she's popped up in my world a bit lately, I must admit.
Yeah, she's very popular. She gets around, that procrastinator. So literally, I would say, let's go to your procrastinator, and you go to a different part of the room, and you ask the procrastinator, you know, where do you live in the body? What do you care about? And you don't ask the procrastinator to kind of loosen up a little and kind of get a little more productive. You literally honor the procrastinator and you say, well, so what's your preference? And I have all these questions in the book. Like, and then I ask directly, like, the procrastinator, say, for a while, my final ace was literally finishing this book. I finally finished a book I'm not finishing. So that felt good. But my procrastinator has its own opinion about my book. And so my procrastinator said, well, if you put this book out and no one likes it, then everyone's going to think you're stupid. So once you realize the procrastinator actually has something really important it cares about, like your feelings and like how you are seen in the world, then you can take care of that directly. Like, you can even thank the procrastinator for caring. And then you can separate from that and say, but actually, I can handle it if the world doesn't like my book the way I would prefer it. But you deal directly with these concerns that are what these selves that you've labeled problematic. Because it does hurt if you get rejected or whatever it is that your particular procrastinator cares about. And then once you understand that, and that the procrastinator is not the enemy, it's a part of you that's only functioning from its point of view. Like, a procrastinator can't do anything else except procrastinate. A highly responsible self can be nothing but responsible. So then you in center, you can have access to all these different selves and make the choice. And you could say, thanks, procrastinator, but I got this. I can handle, I'll make sure that I, you know, talk to my friend and get support. Another procrastinator may be procrastinating because you're working too hard and is worried that you're not getting enough rest. So that's the other thing. Don't assume you know what that part cares about. That's why you go and explore what it is, because it often is quite surprising.
Yes, it's interesting. You say that, you've said this already, that there are parts of us that don't want the goal of success. And I've read many times that many people are afraid of success. And I've always thought that is the most ridiculous statement ever if you're working to something. But then one day I realized I was having that problem myself, in that I was already super busy. And if I finished off this one project, it would mean, you know, more work, more exposure, more visibility, you know, more. And sometimes we have to come to that realization. And that, of course, that's what your book and your questions and your exercises are all about, right?
Exactly. I even devote a chapter to giving up your goal. If that's really the message you're getting, it's okay. Because we get a lot of pressure in society. Like, there's no room for talking about that part that really doesn't want the success. It's like you're not supposed to have that part. It's like a wrong part. And hopefully my book will help people realize, just like you said, it's not. Now, you could have chosen something else, like, all right, let me get an assistant, and that way I can still do this, but I won't be flooded with the workload in the same way. But that part of you did have the legitimate concern, like, oh my gosh, this is just going to be more and more and more.
Yeah. But then, as you said, there's usually a solution on the other side of it. So I want to talk about core negative beliefs, because we're often not aware of those. How does voice dialogue and working with our inner selves help us identify those core negative beliefs?
So when selves develop, it's in infancy, and again, this is all about healthy attachment. Our household validates certain parts and reinforces them and says, other parts are not so great, can you please calm down a little? And we hide those selves, so those become disowned or hidden parts. But a lot of those selves also hold some of the early beliefs that were in the household, or even just sort of adages and cliches, like things don't work out, or if someone was told, you're not smart like your brother, and then they internalize that into, I'm not smart. And so people don't realize often what a gravitational pull those core negative beliefs have. So what we do is we find out which parts actually believe these core negative beliefs. And to me, there's only one or two that they boil down to, like, I'm not enough, nothing works out, and they're very painful. So once we find out which parts of ourself are still holding on to those beliefs, we can be tender and caring with them and say, listen, it's not true that you're not worthy, or that you're not smart. It's true that you were led to believe it. And so it's like you bring them up to date, but you don't ask the tender little ones that held this wounding to be the strong part. You just hold that with tenderness and you shift away, like, wait, it's not true. It may be true that I actually behaved as if I wasn't smart, because those parts sometimes reinforce that, okay, if I'm sort of expected to be stupid, then some parts come in and they're spacey, or these are different words we give them, or airy fairy. And again, that's really liberating when you can get free of that. But with the final eighth, sometimes that is what's going on. If you don't realize that you are still holding on to, say, an old family belief that things don't work out, or success is for other people but not for me, that also happens right there. You've got seven eighths done. It's an area you've had permission psychologically to do fine and well in, but you don't have permission to actually be the victor and to actually prove the core negative belief wrong. Like, wait a minute, if I'm so stupid then, and I'm achieving this, they both can't be true, and the dissonance inside is really disturbing, and that's part of the stuckness. And once you realize that, oh, it's like a distorted loyalty to the caregivers that had you believe that, and you don't have to believe that, and it's simply not true, and you can realize that. But the parts of you that believed it, you hold them tenderly, but it's not true, and you're like, okay, I know I don't know X, Y, and Z, but that doesn't mean I'm stupid. I'm just going to go find out about X, Y, and Z.
Right. I love that you talked about this. You call it double bind. You know, when sometimes we feel stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, we're damned if we do, we're damned if we don't, kind of thing. And you say that often what trips us up is that, you know, we're focused on our plan, our strategic plan, our marketing plan, our marketing calendar, putting all these things into action. And you say the problem and the solution is often our invisible double bind. So would you chat on that for a minute?
Yes, absolutely. So a lot of very wonderfully hardworking, smart people really get puzzled when they're like doubling down on all the amazing skills they have and it's not working. And that's because you're in this inner tug of war that's hidden to you, where you've got parts that are for the goal and the other parts that aren't. And in the voice dialogue process, you explore those parts. And sometimes I literally have had many clients get upset when I'm like, you have to give up your elementary school rules of success. Working harder doesn't always mean you're going to get your goal. And the idea is that you then learn about other parts of yourself. You embrace other parts of yourself so that you get out of this double bind by loosening it. And it takes a lot of vulnerability and that kind of strength, because a lot of times certain types of strength strengths or the selves of you that hold varying strengths, they're the ones that got you seven eighths of the way there. But what you need to go further are parts of yourself that are not something you have natural access to. And in this process, you get to meet them and start to incorporate them in your life, or integrate them, we would say.
Mm. You say a lot of people get stuck at the eighth start there, the you know, seven-eighths of the way there to their goal, and then they get stuck. And it's basically because what we know isn't going to take us to that next eighth level, the completion line, if you will. And I was actually chatting with someone who's very, very accomplished. She's in the publishing world. She's had a long career and suddenly feels that after all these accolades and prizes she's won, that she's failing because the publishing world around her has changed drastically and rapidly. And even though she's tried to stay relevant personally, you know, through courses and new learning, she doesn't enjoy the new way. So that's creating a block for her there. And it's really sad to see when somebody's had such a very successful career and, you know, they're not at the end of their career, but they're heading toward the end of their career and they feel like they're failing. How would voice dialogue help in that situation? What would you recommend?
Yeah, that is very tough. And I'm glad you bring that up because it also, I think, ties in with people having to deal with the change that the COVID is bringing.
Yes.
What parts do you need to bring to the forefront? What parts now have to go in the background? So many people were wrenched from places they loved, the office, the gym, school. And what you're talking about is literally when an industry changes behind your back almost. And when you were doing really well and you love this industry, if I was working with her personally, we would meet the parts of her that were in grief about this, that grief and emotional expression is very much part of this process, and that's okay. And then the parts that are getting the education, the new training, but then other parts, like, do you see, what else do you see here? Like, that we could explore that together. Is this the best way? Is there a different way, given that the tide has shifted and you had an idea that you would end, you know, however, in whatever amount of time, in a particular way, and it looks like that way may not even exist, which is not your fault or even a reflection of your talents. So I would actually encourage this person and honor that she came as this was happening, as opposed to like after the fact, and see how she really feels in certain like quieter places about what to do, because perhaps getting all the training, which is a great idea, is not the best plan for this particular person. Maybe there's a place, a niche that's going to open up where she can take her amazing experience and then feel like she's doing a wonderful last step, say, of her career, last few steps.
Yeah, I definitely think some of the questions you ask in the book would definitely help. Also, this applies, I was reading the foreword by Drs. Hal and Sidra Stone, and they address there that they procrastinated on writing the foreword. And they also mentioned that, you know, they're at the final eighth of their life, because at the time, I think they were 82 and 91, round about there. And so there are lots of phases in life where this final eighth comes into play. It's such an interesting concept. You say that not every sub-personality, not every inner self, if you will, communicates verbally with us. Your angry self might, for example, express itself in a headache. There's a lot of people suffering with insomnia now. I mean, it's you know, everyone I speak with, you probably find the same, right?
Yes.
And so how can voice dialogue help in those situations? You know, if it's not expressing itself verbally, what are we trying to pay attention to here?
So you ask wonderful question. So I'm going to kind of answer in a three-part. One, going back to Hal and Sidra Stone, and of course they were right. Hal has since passed away. But one of the things Hal and Sidra really support is as you grow older, and this could be true with any developmental stage. It could be going from a teenager to a young professional. pay attention to your vulnerabilities, and you can actually have a vibrant old age much longer when you pay attention to the vulnerability and realize you need to shift, and that your former primary cells that were your go-to cells may not be the first ones anymore. And if you are aware enough and can navigate, then you can stay independent and creative so much longer, which is what he did. He literally was on a Zoom meeting, I don't know, probably within a couple of weeks of his passing. So I just want to reinforce that. And then the idea that selves don't just speak with words, like the angry self might just pound, or a weeping self might just kind of moan. And insomnia, especially during this time, is rough. So what I might say is, check your calendar. Like, if you really do have to get up at 5 a.m. or something, and then it's like 3 a.m., you might just want to be with yourself and just ask yourself what's going on and hook into the energy. It's the opposite of resisting. It's embracing that it's there. And you may have parts that disapprove of your insomniac being there, and they're allowed to exist too. But then I would just go into the insomnia and almost physiologically try to identify it. In this particular night, is it that the thoughts don't stop? Is it that your stomach is queasy? And get really curious and dig deep, because, again, that actually relaxes the muscles as you enter this self instead of resisting it. And see what happens with that.
Okay, that sounds good. And so we've covered a whole bunch of questions here throughout the book. I bounced around a lot, I know, but there were key things that I wanted to pull out. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want listeners to know about this book, Bridget?
We've covered a wide array, and I love that. I guess just to highlight the point, which I think we've touched on, is be curious. The way in is to be curious. If you're having trouble with a particular part of yourself, just then move over, enter that part of yourself, and be curious to what's going on, as opposed to wishing it away or any of that. It just doesn't work. If you could wish away your inner critic and you could actually do it, I'd be all for that, but we can't. So be curious.
Yeah. And that inner critic, I mean, it's very difficult to deal with. And you do say it won't go away. We've just got to deal with it.
Exactly. Okay. And, you know, there's things like, double down on the inner critic and all of that. I just haven't seen it really working effectively. So I almost say kiss your inner critic, welcome it. And it cares about your safety. It's just got mechanisms that are brutal. And in the book, I talk about how you can make this inner critic put those weapons down. It's not allowed to be toxic, but it can be clear. So like one of the ways my inner critic worked when I let it back in with my writing was it's a really good editor. And it was just severely clear. But I wasn't going to let it insult my intelligence. But some of when I let my inner critic in my life in a way that's helpful, so it's often a standard bearer. I don't want you to look sloppy, because in this particular case, it's important you don't. So you can take the message without the poison.
Right. And my inner critic's called Gollum. He sits on my shoulder, and I just think, okay, thanks for sharing, and then I flick him away if I can. It doesn't always work.
No, but also, if you flick him away and he comes back, then you can say, all right, I'm really listening.
There we go.
Hear you. You can't hurt me. I'm not accepting that. But is there something I really need to know that you're concerned about? And then you may not have to flick him. He may just go off. He's like, you know, don't forget to turn on your computer or whatever it is. Sometimes it's really pragmatic and you're like, oh, I was a little sloppy in my getting it all together. Thanks, critic. You know, sometimes they're accurate in their information. They're never accurate in the way they beat you up.
Right. Good note to end on. Perfect, Bridget. And this is a perfect timing. That I know you didn't plan it that way, but the book came out at a perfect time for us dealing with pandemic, with COVID. You know, people have got fires down south. We've got smoke up here. I mean, everywhere, you know, there's floods, there are hurricanes. People are dealing with a lot right now. So I think whatever tools we can give people and share with people, that's great. And you certainly have a lot of really good tools and exercises in your book, Bridget. So thank you for being with us. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm really happy to hear that.
And I know listeners can find out much more about you at your website, bridget-dengel-gaspard.com. The book is called The Final Eighth, Enlist Your Inner Selves to Accomplish Your Goals. And a final quick thought you'd like to leave people with about these times and moving forward.
That you may need to find other aspects of yourself, other alter egos, because they're being pushed away right now through means that are out of your control. But what you can control is what parts maybe now need to come to the forefront.
Perfect. Bridget Dengel-Gaspard, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I want to thank each of our listeners for joining us today. Questions, comments, feedback, you can find me at conversationslive.net. You can find more than 700 shows archived also at conversationslive.net. And we'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong, and please stay safe.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.